Fire engines carry boxes of sand for accidents and crime scenes, and stainless steel shovels for removal of body parts. He glanced back at the parking garage. Less than 35 yards, he thought. Very close. He stood still. The plaza was silent. The whole city was quiet. It felt stunned, like a limb briefly paralyzed after a massive bruising blow. The plaza was the epicenter. It was where the blow had landed. It was like a black hole, with emotion compressed into it, too tight to escape. He walked on. The old limestone building was a library. That's okay, he thought. Librarians are nice people. They tell you things, if you ask them. He asked for the DA's office. A sad and subdued woman at the checkout desk gave him directions. It wasn't a long walk. It wasn't a big city. He walked east, past a new office building that had signs for the DMV and a military recruitment center. Behind it was a block of off-brand stores, and then a new courthouse building. It was a plain, flat roof, off-the-shelf design, dressed up with mahogany doors and etched glass. It could have been a church from some weird denomination with a generous but strapped congregation. He avoided the main public entrance. He circled the block until he came to the office wing. He found a door labeled District Attorney. Below it, on a separate brass plate, he found Roden's name. An elected official, he thought. They use a separate plate to make it cheaper when the guy changes every few Novembers. Roden's initials were AA. He had a law degree. Reacher went in through the door and spoke to a receptionist at a counter, asked to see A.A. Roden himself.
About what?
The receptionist asked, quietly but politely. She was middle-aged, well cared for, well turned out, wearing a clean white blouse. She looked like she had worked behind a desk all her life, a practiced bureaucrat, but stressed. She looked like she was carrying all the town's recent troubles on her shoulders. About James Barr, Reacher said.
Are you a reporter?
The receptionist asked. No, Reacher said.
May I tell Mr. Roden's office your connection to the case?
I knew James Barr in the Army.
That must have been some time ago.
A long time ago, Reacher said.
May I have your name?
Jack Reacher. The receptionist dialed the phone and spoke. Reacher guessed she was speaking to a secretary, because both he and Roden were referred to in the third person, like abstractions. Can he see a Mr. Reacher about the case? Not the bar case, just the case. The conversation continued. Then the receptionist covered the phone by clamping it to her chest, below her collarbone, above her left breast.
Do you have information?
She asked. The secretary upstairs can hear your heart beating, Reacher thought. Yes, he said. Information.
From the Army?
She asked. Reacher nodded. The receptionist put the phone back to her face and continued the conversation. It was a long one. Mr. A.A. Roden had an efficient pair of gatekeepers. That was clear. No way of getting past them without some kind of an urgent and legitimate reason. That was clear, too. Reacher checked his watch. 9:40 in the morning. But there was no rush, under the circumstances. Barr was in a coma. Tomorrow would do it, or the next day. Or maybe he could get to Roden through the cop, if need be. What was his name? Emerson? The receptionist hung up the phone.
Please go straight up, she said. Mr. Roden is on the third floor.
I'm on it, Reacher thought. The receptionist wrote his name on a visitor pass and slipped it into a plastic sleeve. He clipped it on his shirt and headed for the elevator, wrote it to the third floor. The third floor had low ceilings and internal corridors lit by fluorescent tubes. There were three doors made of painted fiberboard that were closed, and one set of double doors made of polished wood that were open. Behind those was a secretary at a desk, the second gatekeeper. She was younger than the downstairs lady, but presumably more senior.
"Mr. Reacher?" she asked.
He nodded, and she came out from behind her desk and led him to where the windowed offices started. The third door they came to was labeled A.A. Roden.
"What's the A.A. for?" Reacher asked.
"I'm sure Mr. Roden will tell you if he wants to," the secretary said.
She knocked on the door, and Reacher heard a baritone reply from inside. Then she opened the door and stood aside for Reacher to go in past her.
"Thanks," he said.
"You're most welcome," she said.
Reacher went in. Roden was already on his feet behind his desk, ready to welcome his visitor, full of reflexive courtesy. Reacher recognized him from the TV. He was a guy of about 50, fairly lean, fairly fit, gray hair cut short. In person, he looked smaller. He was maybe an inch under 6 feet and a pound under 200. He was dressed in a summer weight suit, dark blue. He had a blue shirt on and a blue tie. His eyes were blue. Blue was his color, no doubt about it. He was immaculately shaved and wearing cologne. He was a very squared-away guy, no question. As opposed to me, Reacher thought. It was like a study in contrasts. Next to Roden, Reacher was an unkempt giant. He was 6 inches taller and 50 pounds heavier. His hair was 2 inches longer, and his clothes were $1,000 cheaper.
"Mr. Reacher?" Roden said.
Reacher nodded. The office was government basic, but neat. It was cool and quiet. No real view from the window. Just the flat roofs of the off-brand stores and the DMV office with all the ductwork showing. The black glass tower was visible in the distance. There was a weak sun in the sky. At a right angle to the window, there was a trophy wall behind the desk with college degree certificates and photographs of Roden with politicians. There were framed newspaper headlines reporting guilty verdicts in 7 different cases. On another wall was a photograph of a blonde girl wearing a mortarboard and a gown and holding a degree scroll. She was pretty. Reacher looked at her for a moment longer than he needed to.
"That's my daughter," Roden said. "She's a lawyer, too."
"Is she?" Reacher said. "She just opened her own office here in town." There was nothing in his tone. Reacher wasn't sure whether he was proud or disapproving.
"You're due to meet with her, I think," Roden said.
"Am I?" Reacher said.
"Why?"
"She's defending James Barr."
"Your daughter? Is that ethical?" "There's no law against it. It might not be sensible, but it's not unethical."
He said sensible with emphasis, hinting at a number of meanings. Not smart to defend a notorious case, not smart for a daughter to take on her father, not smart for anyone to take on A.A. Roden. He sounded like a very competitive guy.
"She put your name on her provisional witness list," he said.
"Why?"
"She thinks you have information."
"Where did she get my name?"
"I don't know."
"From the Pentagon?"
Roden shrugged.
"I'm not sure, but she got it from somewhere. Therefore, people have been looking for you."
"Is that why I got in here?"
Roden nodded.
"Yes, it is," he said. "That's exactly why. Generally, I don't encourage walk-ins."
"Your staff seems to be on board with that policy."
"I certainly hope so," Roden said.
"Sit down, please."
Reacher sat in the visitor chair, and Roden sat behind his desk. The window was on Reacher's left and Roden's right. Neither man had the light in his eyes. It was an equitable furniture arrangement, different from some prosecutor's offices Reacher had known.
Coffee?
Roden asked.
Please, Reacher said.
Roden made a call and asked for coffee.
Naturally, I'm interested in why you came to see me first, he said.
The prosecution, I mean, rather than the defense.
I wanted your personal opinion, Reacher said.
On what?
On how strong a case you've got against James Barr.
Roden didn't answer immediately. There was a short silence, and then there was a knock at the door, and the secretary came in with coffee. She had a silver tray with the works on it, a French press, two cups, two saucers, a sugar bowl, a tiny pitcher of cream, two silver spoons. The cups were fine china.
Not government issue, Reacher thought. Roden likes his coffee done right.
The secretary put the tray on the edge of the desk so that it was exactly halfway between the desk chair and the visitor chair.
Thanks, Reacher said.
You're most welcome, she said, and left the room.
Help yourself, Roden said, please.
Reacher pushed the plunger down and poured himself a cup, no cream, no sugar. It smelled dark and strong. Coffee, done right. The case against James Barr is exceptionally good, Roden said.
Eyewitnesses? Reacher asked.
No, Roden said. But eyewitness testimony can be of random value. I'm almost glad we don't have eyewitnesses, because what we've got instead is exceptional physical evidence. And science doesn't lie. It doesn't get confused.
Exceptional, Reacher said.
A complete, rock-solid evidence trail that ties the man to the crime.
How solid?
As good as it gets. The best I've ever seen. I'm completely confident.
I've heard prosecutors say that before.
Not this one, Mr. Reacher. I'm a very cautious man. I don't prosecute capital cases unless I'm certain of the outcome.
Keeping score?
Roden gestured above and behind him at his trophy wall.
7 for 7, he said. 100%. In how long?
In 3 years. James Barr will make it 8 for 8. If he ever wakes up.
Suppose he wakes up damaged.
If he wakes up with any brain function at all, he's going to trial. What he did here can't be forgiven.
Okay, Reacher said.
Okay, what?
You've told me what I wanted to know.
You said you had information from the army?
I'll keep it to myself for now.
You were a military policeman. Am I right?
13 years, Reacher said.
And you knew James Barr?
Briefly.
Tell me about him.
Not yet.
Mr. Reacher, if you have exculpatory information or anything to add at all, you really need to tell me now.
Do I?
I'll get it, anyway. My daughter will submit it. She'll be looking for a plea bargain.
What does the AA stand for?
Excuse me?
Your initials.
Alexei Alexeyevich. My family came from Russia, but a long time ago, before the October Revolution.
But they keep up traditions.
As you can see.
What do people call you?
Alex, of course.
Reacher stood up.
Well, thanks for your time, Alex, and the coffee. Are you going to see my daughter now?
Is there any point? You seem pretty sure of yourself.
Roden smiled an indulgent smile.
It's a matter of procedure, he said. I'm an officer of the court, and you're on a witness list. I'm obliged to point out that you're obliged to go. Anything less would be unethical.
Where is she?
In the glass tower you can see from the window.
Okay, Reacher said. I guess I could drop by.
I still need whatever information you have, Roden said. Reacher shook his head.
Nah, he said.
You really don't.
He returned his visitor pass to the woman at the reception desk and headed back to the public plaza, stood in the cold sun, and turned a complete circle, getting a sense of the place. All cities are the same, and all cities are different. They all have colors. Some are gray. This one was brown. Reacher guessed the brick was made from local clay and had carried the color of old farmland into the facades. Even the stone was flecked with tan, like it carried deposits of iron. There were accents of dark red here and there, like old barns. It was a warm place. Not busy, but it was surviving. It would rebound after the tragedy. There was progress and optimism and dynamism. All the new construction proved it. There were work zones and raw concrete curbs everywhere. Lots of planning, lots of rebuilding, lots of hope. The new parking garage extension anchored the north end of the downtown strip. It suggested commercial expansion. It was south and slightly west of the kill zone. Very close. Directly west and maybe twice as distant was a length of the raised highway. It ran free and clear through a curve for maybe 30 yards before curling in behind the library. Then it curled some more and passed behind the black glass tower. The tower was due north of the plaza. It had an NBC sign near the door on a black granite slab. And Yanni's workplace, Reacher guessed, as well as Roden's daughter's. East of the plaza was the office building with the DMV and the recruiting office. That was where the victims had come from. They had spilled out the door. What had Ann Yanni said? At the end of a long work week? They had hustled west across the plaza toward their parked cars or the bus depot and had stumbled into a nightmare. The narrow walkway would have slowed them down and lined them up, like shooting fish in a barrel. Reacher walked the length of the empty ornamental pool to the revolving door at the base of the tower. He went in and checked the lobby for a directory. There was a glassed-in board made of ridged black felt with press-in white letters. NBC was on the second floor. Some of the other suites were empty, and Reacher guessed the rest changed hands fast enough to make it worth holding on to the press-in letter system. Law Offices of Helen Roden was listed on 4. The letters were a little misaligned, and the spacing was off. Rockefeller Center, it ain't, Reacher thought. He waited for the elevator in a queue of 2, him and a pretty blonde woman. He looked at her, and she looked at him. She got out on 2, and he realized it was Ann Yanni. He recognized her from the broadcast. Then he figured all he needed to do was meet Emerson from the local PD, and he would have brought the whole breaking news tableau to life. He found Helen Roden's suite. It was at the front of the building. Her windows were going to overlook the plaza. He knocked, heard a muffled reply, and went in. There was an empty reception room with the secretary's desk. The desk was unoccupied. It was second-hand, but not recently used. No secretary yet, Reacher thought. Early days. He knocked on the inner office door, heard the same voice make a second reply. He went in and found Helen Roden at another second-hand desk. He recognized her from her father's photograph, but face to face, she looked even better. She was probably no more than 30, quite tall, lightly built, slim, in an athletic sort of a way, not anorexic. Either she ran or played soccer or had been very lucky with her metabolism. She had long blonde hair and her father's blue eyes. There was intelligence behind them. She was dressed all in black, in a pantsuit with a tight stretch top under the coat. Like her, Reacher thought. Can't beat it.
Hello, she said.
I'm Jack Reacher, he said. She stared at him.
You're kidding. Are you really?
He nodded. Always have been, always will be.
Unbelievable.
Not really. Everybody's somebody.
I mean, how did you know to come? We couldn't find you.
I saw it on the TV. Ann Yanni, Saturday morning.
Well, thank God for TV, she said. And thank God you're here.
I was in Miami, he said, with a dancer.
A dancer?
She was Norwegian, he said. He walked to the window and looked out. He was four stories up, and the main shopping street ran away directly south, down a hill, emphasizing his elevation. The ornamental pool was placed with its long axis exactly lined up with the street. The pool was on the street, really, except they had blocked the street off to make the plaza. Someone returning from a long spell away would be surprised to find a big tank of water where once there had been roadway. The pool was much longer and narrower than it had looked from ground level. It looked sad and empty, with just a thin layer of mud and scum on the black tile. Beyond it, and slightly to the right, was the new parking structure. It was slightly downhill from the plaza, maybe half a story's difference.
Were you here? Reacher asked. When it happened?
Yes, I was,
Helen Roden said quietly.
Did you see it?
Not at first. I heard the first three gunshots. They came very fast. The first, and then a tiny pause, and then the next two. Then another pause, a little longer, but just a split second, really. I stood up in time for the last three. Horrible.
Reacher nodded.
Brave girl, he thought. She hears gunshots and she stands up. She doesn't dive under the desk.
Then he thought, the first, and then a tiny pause. That was the sound of a skilled rifleman watching where his first cold shot went. So many variables. The cold barrel, the range, the wind, the zeroing, the sighting in.
Did you see people die? He asked.
Two of them, she said behind him. It was awful.
Three shots and two people.
He missed once, either the fourth or the fifth shot, they're not sure. They found the bullet in the pool. That's why it's empty, they drained it.
Reacher said nothing.
The bullet is part of the evidence, Helen said. It ties the rifle to the crime.
Did you know any of the dead people?
No. They were just people, I guess. In the wrong place at the wrong time.
Reacher said nothing.
I saw flames from the gun, Helen said. Way over there, in the shadows, in the dark. Little spits of flame.
Muzzle flashes, Reacher said. He turned back from the window. She held out her hand.
I'm Helen Roden, she said. I'm sorry, I should have introduced myself properly.
Reacher took her hand. It was warm and firm.
Just Helen,
he said.
Not Helena Alexeyevna or something?
She stared at him again.
How the hell did you know that?
I met your dad, he said, and let go of her hand.
Did you?
She said.
Where?
In his office, just now.
You went to his office today?
I just left there.
Why did you go to his office? You're my witness. He shouldn't have seen you.
He was very keen to talk.
What did you tell him?
Nothing. I asked questions instead.
What questions?
I wanted to know how strong his case was against James Barr.
I'm representing James Barr, and you're a defense witness. You should have been talking to me, not him.
Reacher said nothing.
Unfortunately, the case against James Barr is very strong, she said.
How did you get my name? Reacher asked.
From James Barr, of course, she said. How else?
From Barr? I don't believe it.
Well, listen,
she said. She turned away to the desk and pressed a key on an old-fashioned cassette player. Reacher heard a voice he didn't recognize say, denying it is not an option. Helen touched the pause key and kept her finger on it.
His first lawyer, she said. We changed representation yesterday.
Ah, he was in a coma yesterday.
Technically, my client is James Barr's sister, his next of kin.
Then she let go of the pause key, and Reacher heard room sounds and hiss, and then a voice he hadn't heard for 14 years. It was exactly how he remembered it. It was low and tense and raspy. It was the voice of a man who rarely spoke. It said, get Jack Reacher for me. He stood there, stunned. Helen Roden pressed the stop key.
See?
She said. Then she checked her watch.
10:30, she said. Stick around and join in the client conference.
She unveiled him like a conjurer on a stage, like a rabbit out of a hat. First in was a guy Reacher immediately took for an ex-cop. He was introduced as Franklin, a freelance investigator who worked for lawyers. They shook hands.
You're a hard man to find,
Franklin said.
Wrong, Reacher said. I'm an impossible man to find.
Want to tell me why?
There were instant questions in Franklin's eyes, a cop's questions like, how much use is this guy going to be as a witness? What is he? A felon? A fugitive? Will he have credibility on the stand?
Just a hobby, Reacher said. Just a personal choice.
So you're cool.
You could skate on me.
Then a woman came in. She was in her mid to late 30s, probably, dressed for an office and stressed and sleepless. But behind the agitation, she wasn't unappealing. She looked like a kind and decent person, even pretty. But she was clearly James Barr's sister. Reacher knew that even before they were introduced. She had the same coloring and a softer, feminized, older version of the same face.
I'm Rosemary Barr, she said. I'm so glad you found us. It feels providential. Now I really feel we're getting somewhere.
Reacher said nothing at all. The law offices of Helen Roden didn't run to a conference room. Reacher figured that would come later. Maybe, if she prospered. So all four people crowded into the inner office. Helen sat at her desk. Franklin perched on a corner of it. Reacher leaned on the windowsill. Rosemary Barr paced, nervously. If there had been a rug, she would have worn holes in it.
Okay, Helen said. Defense strategy. At the minimum, we want to pursue a medical plea, but we'll aim higher than that. How high we eventually get will depend on a number of factors, in which connection first. I'm sure we all want to hear what Mr. Reacher has to say.
I don't think you do, Reacher said.
Do what?
Want to hear what I've got to say.
Why wouldn't we?
Because you jumped to the wrong conclusion.
Which is?
Why do you think I went to see your father first?
I don't know.
Because I didn't come here to help James Barr.
Nobody spoke.
I came here to bury him, Reacher said. They all stared.
But why?
Rosemary Barr asked.
Because he's done this before. And once was enough.
Chapter 3.
Reacher moved and propped his back against the window reveal and turned sideways so that he could see the plaza, and so that he couldn't see his audience.
"Is this a privileged conversation?" he asked.
"Yes," Helen Roden said. "It is. It's a client conference. It's automatically protected. Nothing we say here can be repeated."
"Is it ethical for you to hear bad news? Legally?"
There was a long silence.
"Are you going to give evidence for the prosecution?"
Helen Roden asked.
"I don't think I'll have to, under the circumstances. But I will, if necessary."
"Then we would hear the bad news anyway. We would take a deposition from you before the trial, to guarantee no more surprises."
More silence.
"James Barr was a sniper," Reacher said. "Not the best the Army ever had, and not the worst. Just a good, competent rifleman. Average in almost every way."
Then he paused and turned his head and looked down to his left, at the cheap new building with the recruitment office in it. Army, Navy, Air Force, Marine Corps.
"Four types of people join the military," he said. "First, for people like me, it's a family trade. Second, there are patriots eager to serve their country. Third, there are people who just need a job. And fourth, there are people who want to kill other people. The military is the only place where it's legal to do that." James Barr was the fourth type. Deep down, he thought it would be fun to kill.
Rosemary Barr looked away. Nobody spoke.
"But he never got the chance," Reacher said. "I was a very thorough investigator when I was an MP, and I learned all about him. I studied him. He trained for 5 years. I went through his logbooks. Some weeks he fired 2,000 rounds, all of them at paper targets or silhouettes. I counted a career total of nearly 250,000 rounds fired, and not one of them at the enemy. He didn't go to Panama in 1989. We had a very big army back then, and we required only a very small force, so most guys missed out. It burned him up. Then Desert Shield happened in 1990. He went to Saudi, but he wasn't in Desert Storm in 1991. They made it a mostly armored campaign. James Barr sat it out in Saudi, cleaning sand out of his rifle, firing 2,000 training rounds a week. Then after Desert Storm was over, they sent him to Kuwait City for the cleanup."
"What happened there?"
Rosemary Barr asked.
"He snapped," Reacher said. "That's what happened there. The Soviets had collapsed. Iraq was back in its box. He looked ahead and saw that war was over. He had trained nearly 6 years and had never fired his gun in anger and was never going to. A lot of his training had been about visualization, about seeing himself putting the reticle on the medulla oblongata, where the spinal cord broadens at the base of the brain, about breathing slow and squeezing the trigger, about the split-second pause while the bullet flies, about seeing the puff of pink mist from the back of the head. He had visualized all of that many times, but he had never seen it, not once. He had never seen the pink mist, and he really wanted to."
Silence in the room.
"So he went out one day, alone," Reacher said, "in Kuwait City. He set up and waited. Then he shot and killed four people coming out of an apartment building."
Helen Roden was staring at him.
"He fired from a parking garage," Reacher said. "Second level. It was directly opposite the apartment building's door. The victims were American non-coms, as it happened. They had weekend passes, and they were in street clothes."
Rosemary Barr was shaking her head.
This can't be true, she said. It just can't be. He wouldn't do it. And if he did, he'd have gone to prison. But he got an honorable discharge instead, right after the Gulf, and a campaign medal. So it can't have happened. It can't possibly be true.
That's exactly why I'm here, Reacher said. There was a serious problem. Remember the sequence of events. We had four dead guys, and we worked from there. In the end, I followed the trail all the way to your brother. But it was a very tough trail. We took all kinds of wrong turns. And along one of them, we found stuff out about the four dead guys. Stuff we really didn't want to know, because they had been doing things they shouldn't have been doing.
What things?
Helen Roden asked. Kuwait City was a hell of a place, full of rich Arabs. Even the poor ones had Rolexes and Rolls Royces and marble bathrooms with solid gold faucets. A lot of them had fled temporarily for the duration, but they had left all their stuff behind, and some of them had left their families behind, their wives and daughters.
And?
Our four dead non-coms have been doing the conquering army thing, just like the Iraqis before them. That's how they saw it, I guess. We saw it as rape and armed robbery. As it happened, they had left quite a trail that day inside that building, and other buildings on other days. We found enough loot in their footlockers to start another branch of Tiffany's. Watches, diamonds, all kinds of portable stuff. And underwear. We figured they used the underwear to keep count of the wives and daughters.
So, what happened?
It got political. Inevitably, it went up the chain of command. The Gulf was supposed to be a big, shiny success for us. It was supposed to be 100% wonderful and 100% squeaky clean, and the Kuwaitis were our allies, and so on and so forth. So ultimately, we were told to cover for the four guys. We were told to bury the story, which we did. Which also meant letting James Barr walk. Because whispers had gotten out, and we knew his lawyer would have used them. We were afraid of blackmail. If we took Barr to trial, his lawyer would have countered with a justifiable homicide claim. He would have said Barr had been standing up for the honor of the army, in a rough and ready sort of a way. All the beans would have spilled in the process. We were told not to risk that, so our hands were tied. It was a stalemate.
Maybe it was justifiable homicide, Rosemary Barr said. Maybe James really did know all along.
Ma'am, he didn't know. I'm very sorry, but he didn't. He was never near any of those guys before. Didn't know them from Adam. Didn't say anything to me about them when I caught up to him. He hadn't been in KC long, not long enough to know anything. He was just killing people. For fun. He confessed to that, to me personally, before any of the other stuff ever came to light. Silence in the room. So we hushed it up and mustered him out, Reacher said. We said his four guys had been killed by Palestinians, which was plausible in Kuwait City in 1991. I was mildly pissed about the whole thing. It wasn't the worst situation I had ever seen, but it wasn't the nicest either. James Barr got away with murder, by sheer luck. So I went to see him before he left, and I told him to justify his great good fortune by never stepping out of line again, not ever, the whole rest of his life. I told him if he ever did, I would come find him and make him sorry. Silence in the room. It lasted minutes. So here I am, Reacher said.
This must be classified information, Helen Roden said. I mean, Surely it can't ever be used. There would be a huge scandal.
Reacher nodded. It's highly classified. It's sealed inside the Pentagon. That's why I asked if this conversation was privileged.
You'd get in big trouble if you talked about it.
I've been in big trouble before. I came here to find out if I needed to get in big trouble again. As it happens, I don't think I do. I think your father can put James Barr away without my help. But my help is always available if he needs it.
Then Helen understood. You're here to pressure me, she said. Aren't you? You're telling me if I try too hard, you'll cut me off at the knees.
I'm here to keep my promise, Reacher said, to James Barr.
He closed the door and left them there, three silent and disappointed people in a room. Then he rode down in the elevator. Anyani got in again on two. He wondered for a moment if she spent all day riding the elevators, hoping to be recognized, hoping to be asked for an autograph. He ignored her. Got out with her in the lobby and just headed for the door. He stood for a moment in the plaza, deciding. James Barr's medical condition was the complicating factor. He didn't want to stick around until the guy woke up. If that happened at all, it might take weeks. And Reacher was not a guy who liked to stick around. He liked to be on the move. 2 days in one place was about his limit. But he was stuck for alternatives. He couldn't hint at anything to Alex Roden, couldn't give him a call-me-if-you-need-me number. For one thing, he didn't have a phone. For another, a guy as squared away and cautious as Alex Roden was would worry away at the hint until something began to unravel. He would make the link to the Pentagon easily enough. Reacher had even asked, did she get my name from the Pentagon? That had been a careless mistake. So Alex Roden would put two and two together eventually. He would figure, there's something extra here, and I can find out what it is from the Pentagon. The Pentagon would stonewall him, of course, but Roden wouldn't like being stonewalled. He would go to the media. Anyani, probably. She would be ready for another network story, and at bottom, Roden would be insecure enough about losing the case that he would simply have to know. He wouldn't give up on it. And Reacher didn't want the story out there, not unless it was absolutely necessary. Gulf War vets had it hard enough with the chemical stuff and the uranium poisoning. All they had going for them was the conflict's spotless, just war reputation. They didn't need defaming by association with people like Barr and his victims. People would say, hey, they were all doing it. And they weren't all doing it in Reacher's experience. That had been a good army. So he didn't want the story out there unless it was absolutely necessary. And he wanted to judge that for himself. So, no hints to Alex Roden. No call-me contingencies. So, what exactly? He decided to stick around for 24 hours. Maybe there would be a clearer prognosis on Barr's condition after that. Maybe somehow he could check with Emerson and get a better feel for the evidence. Then maybe he could feel okay about leaving things with Alex Roden's office on a kind of forensic autopilot. If there were problems down the road, maybe he would read about them in a newspaper somewhere, far in the future, on a beach or in a bar. And then he could come all the way back again. So 24 hours in a small heartland city. He decided to go see if there was a river. There was a river. It was a broad, slow body of water that moved west to east through an area south of downtown. Some tributary that fed the mighty Ohio, he guessed.
Its north bank was straightened and strengthened with massive stone blocks along a 300-yard stretch. The blocks might have weighed 50 tons each. They were immaculately chiseled and expertly fitted. They made a quayside, a wharf. They had tall, fat iron mushrooms set into them to tie off ropes. Stone paving slabs made the wharf 30 feet deep. All along its length were tall wooden sheds, open on the riverside, open on the street side. The street was made of cobbles. 100 years ago, there would have been huge river barges tied up and unloading. There would have been swarms of men at work. There would have been horses and carts clattering on the cobbles, but now there was nothing, just absolute stillness and the slow drift of the water. Scabs of rust on the iron mushrooms, clumps of weeds between the stones. Some of the sheds still had faded names on them. McKinty Dry Goods, Allentown Seed Company, Parker Supply. Reacher strolled the 300 yards and looked at all of them. They were still standing, strong and square. Ripe for renovation, he guessed. A city that put an ornamental pool with a fountain in a public plaza would spruce up the waterfront. It was inevitable. There was construction all over town. It would move south. They would give someone tax breaks to open a riverside cafe, maybe a bar, maybe with live music Thursday through Saturday, maybe with a little museum laying out the history of the river trade. He turned to walk back and came face to face with Helen Roden.
"You're not such a hard man to find," she said.
"Evidently," he said.
"Tourists always come to the docks."
She was carrying a lawyer-sized briefcase.
"Can I buy you lunch?"
she said. She walked him back north to the edge of the new gentrification. In the space of a single dug-up block, the city changed from old and worn to new and repainted. Stores changed from dusty mom-and-pop places with displays of vacuum cleaner bags and washing machine hoses to new establishments showing off spotlit $100 dresses and shoes and $4 lattes and things made of titanium. They walked past a few such places, and then Helen Roden led him into an eatery. It was the kind of place he had seen before. It was the kind of place he usually avoided. White walls, some exposed brick, engine-turned aluminum tables and chairs, weird salad combinations, random ingredients thrown together and called inventive. She led him to a table in the far back corner. An energetic kid came by with menus. Helen Roden ordered something with oranges and walnuts and gorgonzola cheese, with a cup of herbal tea. Reacher gave up on reading his menu and ordered the same thing, but with coffee, regular, black.
"This is my favorite place in town," Helen said.
He nodded. He believed her. She looked right at home. The long straight hair, the black clothes, the youthful glow. He was older and came from a different time and a different place.
"I need you to explain something," she said.
She bent down and opened her briefcase, came out with the old tape player, placed it carefully on the table, pressed play. Reacher heard James Barr's first lawyer say, "Denying it is not an option." Then he heard Barr say, "Get Jack Reacher for me." "You already played that for me," he said.
"But why would he say it?"
Helen asked. "That's what you want me to explain?" She nodded. "I can't," he said.
"Logically, you're the last person he should have asked for."
"I agree."
"Could he have been in any doubt about how you felt 14 years ago?"
"I don't think so. I made myself pretty clear."
"Then why would he ask for you now?"
Richard didn't answer. The food came and they started eating. oranges, walnuts, gorgonzola cheese, all kinds of leaves and lettuces, and a raspberry vinaigrette. It wasn't too bad, and the coffee was okay. "Play me the whole tape," he said. She put her fork down and pressed the rewind key, kept her hand there, one fingertip on each key, like a pianist. She had long fingers, no rings, polished nails, neatly trimmed. She pressed play and picked up her fork again. Reacher heard no sound for a moment until the blank leader cleared the tape head. Then he heard a prison acoustic. Echoes, distant metallic clattering, a man breathing. Then he heard a door open and the thump of another man sitting down. No scraping of chair legs on concrete. A prison chair, bolted to the floor. The lawyer started talking. He was old and bored. He didn't want to be there. He knew Barr was guilty. He made banal small talk for a while, grew frustrated with Barr's silence. Then he said, full of exasperation, "I can't help you if you won't help yourself." There was a long, long pause, and then Barr's voice came through, agitated, close to the microphone. "They got the wrong guy." He said it again. Then the lawyer started up again, not believing him, saying the evidence was all there, looking for a reason behind an indisputable fact. Then Barr asked for Reacher, twice. And the lawyer asked if Reacher was a doctor, twice. Then Barr got up and walked away. There was a sound of hammering on a locked door, and then nothing more. Helen Roden pressed the stop key.
"So why?" she asked. "Why say he didn't do it, and then call for a guy who knows for sure he did it before?"
Reacher just shrugged his shoulders and said nothing, but he saw in Helen's eyes that she had an answer.
"You know something," she said. "Maybe you don't know you know it, but there's got to be something there, something he thinks can help him."
"Does it matter? He's in a coma. He might never wake up."
"It matters a lot. He could get better treatment."
"I don't know anything."
"Are you sure? Was there a psychiatric evaluation made back then?"
"It never got that far."
"Did he claim insanity?"
"No, he claimed a perfect score. 4 for 4.
"Did you think he was nuts?"
"That's a big word. Was it nuts to shoot 4 people for fun? Of course it was. Was he nuts, legally? I'm sure he wasn't."
"You must know something, Reacher," Helen said. "It must be way down in there. You've got to dredge it up."
He kept quiet for a moment. "Have you actually seen the evidence?" he asked.
"I've seen a summary."
"How bad is it?"
"It's terrible. There's no question he did it. This is about mitigation, nothing more. And his state of mind. I can't let them execute an insane person."
"So wait until he wakes up, run some tests."
"They won't count. He could wake up like a fruitcake, and the prosecution will say that was caused by the blows to the head in the jailhouse fight. They'll say he was perfectly sane at the time of the crime."
"Is your dad a fair man?"
"He lives to win."
"Like father, like daughter?"
She paused.
"Somewhat," she said.
Reacher finished up his salad, chased the last walnut around with his fork, and then gave up and used his fingers instead.
"What's on your mind?"
Helen asked.
"Just a minor detail," he said. 14 years ago, it was a very tough case with barely adequate forensics, and he confessed. This time, the forensics seem to be a total slam dunk, but he's denying it."
"What does that mean?"
"I don't know."
"So think about what you do know,"
Helen said.
"Please, you must know something. You have to ask yourself, Why did he come up with your name? There has to be a reason.
Reacher said nothing. The kid who had served them came back and took their plates away. Reacher pointed at his coffee cup, and the kid made another trip and refilled it. Reacher cradled it in his hands and smelled the steam.
May I ask you a personal question?
Helen Roden said to him. Depends how personal, Reacher said.
Why were you so untraceable? Normally guys like Franklin can find anybody.
Maybe he's not as good as you think.
He's probably better than I think.
Not everyone is traceable.
I agree. But you don't look like you belong in that category.
I was in the machine, Reacher said, my whole life. Then the machine coughed and spat me out. So I thought, okay, if I'm out, I'm out. All the way out. I was a little angry, and it was probably an immature reaction, but I got used to it.
Like a game?
Like an addiction, Reacher said. I'm addicted to being out. The kid brought the check. Helen Roden paid. Then she put her tape player back in her briefcase, and she and Reacher left together. They walked north, past the construction at the bottom of First Street. She was heading to her office, and he was going to look for a hotel. A man called Grigor Linsky watched them walk. He was slumped low in a car parked at the curb. He knew where to wait. He knew where she ate when she had company. Chapter 4 Reacher checked into a downtown hotel called the Metropole Palace, 2 blocks east of First Street, about level with the main shopping strip. He paid cash up front for one night only and used the name Jimmy Reese. He had cycled through all the presidents and vice presidents long ago, and was now using second baseman from the Yankees' non-championship years. Jimmy Reese had played pretty well during part of 1930, and pretty badly during part of 1931. He had come from nowhere and moved on to St. Louis for part of 1932. Then he had quit. He had died in California, aged 92. But now he was back, with a single room and a bath in the Metropole Palace, for one night only, due to check out the next morning before 11 o'clock. The Metropole was a sad, half-empty, faded old place, but it had once been grand. Reacher could see that. He could picture the corn traders 100 years ago walking up the hill from the river wharf and staying the night. He guessed the lobby had once looked like a Western saloon, but now it was thinly made over with modernist touches. There was a refurbished elevator. The rooms had swipe cards instead of keys. But he guessed the building hadn't really changed very much. His room was certainly old-fashioned and gloomy. The mattress felt like a part of the original inventory. He lay down on it and put his hands behind his head, thought back more than 14 years to Kuwait City. All cities have colors, and KC was white. White stucco, white-painted concrete, white marble. Skies burned white by the sun, men in white robes. The parking garage James Barr had used was white, and the apartment building opposite was white. Because of the glare, the 4 dead guys had all been wearing aviator shades. All 4 men had been hit in the head, but none of the shades had broken. They had just fallen off. All 4 bullets had been recovered, and they broke the case. They were match-grade 168-grain jacketed boat tails, not hollow points because of the Geneva Convention. They were an American sniper's bullets, either Army or Marines. If Barr had used a battle rifle, or a submachine gun, or a sidearm, Reacher would have gotten nowhere, because every firearm in theater except these sniper rifles, used standard NATO rounds, which would have cast the net way too wide, because just about all of NATO was in country. But Barr's whole purpose